IRIB English Radio. The Lebanese army arrests 9 people in connection with the deadly violence in Beirut during a protest against a probe into last year's port blast. Israeli soldiers shoot and kill a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank town of Beit Jela. Also ahead, the United States reiterates its commitment to Taiwan as rock solid as tension is rising between Washington and Beijing over the island. Thank you for joining us. Our top story for this hour, the Lebanese army has arrested 9 people in connection with gunfire in the capital during protests against a judge investigating last year's Beirut port blast. At least 6 people were killed and 60 others wounded in shootings and blasts. Army troops later moved in to clear the protest site. Prime Minister Najib Meqati has declared Friday a day of public mourning over the lives lost. The demonstrators were outraged at what they called Washington's interference in the investigation. They said the judge overseeing the case was being swayed by the United States.
Beirut has once again been mired by violence. This time the violence was one-sided. At least 6 people were killed and 60 others wounded after gunmen shot at peaceful protesters in El Tayuni roundabout in Beirut. The Lebanese army deployed heavily to contain the area and clear it from any armed presence. The Lebanese interior minister stressed that the incident of sniper fire is unacceptable.
We didn't have any intelligence that such an issue will occur. The organizers of the protests had confirmed that the protest was peaceful. The problem began when the first sniper bullet was shot. It was clearly a sniper fire since the wounds were in the head and the martyrs were all from one side.
Hezbollah and the Amal movement in a joint statement accused the Lebanese Forces Party of attempting to drag the country into civil unrest, calling on its supporters to show self-restraint. What started as a peaceful protest turned into a massacre against unarmed protesters, whose only crime was denouncing what they see as an unfair and politicized probe into the Beirut port explosion. The popular protest was in tandem with a sit-in by experts at law who demanded that current judge prosecutor in charge of the Beirut port explosion investigation be either removed or that he works by the standards of impartiality, as stipulated in legal standards.
We support accountability against anyone who is in authority and is accused of mismanagement, and they should bear all legal allegations. However, this should be done through the principle of a transparent investigation to uncover the truth and in respect of the Constitution and Lebanese laws and reputation. These victims of the port blast and their families are our families, and we want to uncover the truth more than they do.
Judge Tariq Vitar, the judicial investigator into the Beirut port blast, was accused by several members of the Lebanese parliament of being selective and political in his charges.
There is clear partiality in selecting the individuals he wants to take to court. There were 12 ministers who were in those portfolios. Then why did he only choose 4 from one political group? Why did he select 1 prime minister from 3 prime ministers? Why is the judicial system insulting the legislation council? There is a law that stipulates that members of parliament and ministers are tried in the parliament and not in the judicial council.
Vitar was notified on Monday of a lawsuit regarding his neutrality in the investigation, putting the probe on hold. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Lebanon's President Michel Aoun has pledged to hold accountable those responsible for Thursday's deadly violence in Beirut.
What happened will be the subject of security and judicial follow-up, and I, for my part, will ensure that the investigation reaches the truth of what happened in order to hold those responsible and instigators to account.
Aoun said it is unacceptable that weapons once again become means of communication among rival groups. He said he has contacted the relevant parties to make sure such violence never happens again. The Lebanese president stressed that he will not allow anyone to take the country hostage to their own interests. Separately, the Supreme Islamic Shia Council decried the violence as an unspeakable crime and called on Lebanese security authorities to identify the perpetrators. Meanwhile, the United States has called for easing of tensions in the Arab country.
We offer our sincerest condolences to the Lebanese people and those impacted by the tragic loss of life outside the Palace of Justice in Beirut earlier this morning. We join Lebanese authorities in their call for calm, their calls for de-escalation of tensions.
Washington said the future of Lebanon's democracy depends on the ability of its citizens to address difficult issues with confidence in the rule of law. Also, the UN Secretary General called on those concerned in Lebanon to immediately halt acts of violence. Antonio Guterres urged Lebanese parties to refrain from provocative acts or inflammatory rhetoric. The UN chief also stressed the need for an impartial, thorough and transparent investigation into the 2020 explosion that devastated the port of Beirut. Iraqis protest against the results of the Sunday parliamentary elections amid reports of voting irregularities. Different factions have objected to the initial results that saw a bloc headed by influential cleric Muqtada Sadr coming first with 70 seats. The Fatah Alliance rejected the results as fabricated after reports of fraud. Iraq's Electoral Commission started the manual counting of a portion of ballots, which has changed the results in some districts. The final results are yet to be announced. No single political bloc has won a majority in the 329-member parliament. Iran has warned the International Atomic Energy Agency over its silence towards Israel's nuclear program. Iran's ambassador to the Vienna-based international organization said silence and negligence towards the issue send negative signals to members of the non-proliferation treaty. Kazem Gharibabadi regretted that being outside the treaty means having no commitments and not being subject to criticism. This comes after the IAEA chief's response when asked about focusing on Iran's nuclear program while keeping silent about Israel's. Rafael Mariano Grossi's argued that Iran is an NPT member, while the Israeli regime has not even signed the treaty. Israel is believed to be the only possessor of nuclear arms in West Asia and is estimated to have hundreds of nuclear warheads in its arsenals. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military claimed the man had been throwing firebombs at a cars near a settlement in Beit Jela town in Bethlehem, but local sources say the incident took place during an Israeli raid on the town and that another Palestinian was arrested. This comes a day after a young Palestinian man was shot dead in southern Ramallah. In recent weeks, Israeli forces have killed several Palestinians during attacks across the occupied West Bank. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have held a rally in solidarity with the Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails who have begun their hunger strike to protest Israeli authorities' inhumane treatment. Ruba Shabitz reports from Gaza.
In solidarity with the Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails, Palestinians held a demonstration in front of the Red Cross headquarters in the Gaza City, demanding an end to the recent Israeli strict treatment against the inmates. Following the recent jailbreak of six inmates from the high-security Jilbo prison, Israeli regime keeps practicing inhumane policies and increasing abuse against Palestinian detainees.
We are here to send this message to our prisoners that we won't leave them alone in this battle against the Israeli regime. We won't remain silent over the violations of the rights of our inmates in Israeli jails. The international community should make an urgent action to provide protection for our prisoners.
According to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, dozens of Palestinian detainees from Islamic Jihad have begun their open-ended hunger strike on Wednesday, protesting the Israeli violations and torture inside jails.
Following the heroic escape operation by six inmates, the Israeli regime began to intensify its inhumane torturing policies against our brothers, especially the Islamic Jihad members. Our prisoners have started their hunger strike protesting the inhumane policies of the Israeli regime.
In his speech, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, Ziyad al-Nakhala, announced the movement's readiness to respond firmly against the Israeli violations of prisoners' rights, even if this leads to a new round of violence.
We are here today to support our prisoners who have begun their hunger strike. We call on the international community to stop these violations. We warn the Israeli regime that it will face a firm response if these punitive measures are not stopped. Israel is responsible for the lives of our detainees.
About 400 prisoners who belong to the Islamic Jihad movement have begun their hunger strike with the support of other factions. The strike is in protest of Tel Aviv's inhumane measures against Palestinian prisoners, intensified following the escape of six inmates from a high-security Israeli prison last month. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
The White House says the United States' commitment to Taiwan is, quote, rock solid amid rising tensions between Washington and Beijing.
Well, the U.S. commitment to Taiwan is rock solid and contributes to the maintenance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and within the region. This is why we will continue to assist Taiwan in maintaining a sufficient self-defense capability.
Jen Psaki said the U.S. will continue to support what she called Taiwan's self-defense against the threats posed by China. The remarks follow recent reports that U.S. troops have been secretly training the Taiwanese military for about a year. Neither Washington nor Taipei has denied the claim. China has repeatedly urged the U.S. to stop its military support for Taiwan, saying it threatens regional peace. Beijing regards Taiwan as its breakaway province and maintains its sovereignty over the island under the One China policy. Political commentator Danny Shaw says the U.S. is trying to use Taiwan as an excuse to surround China with illegal military bases.
Not to say that China doesn't have its own internal contradictions, but when has China ever sanctioned or bombed or underdeveloped other autonomous nations, as the U.S. has a long, long track record? And that's really the legacy, the essence of neoliberalism today. So that's why they're trying to again use Taiwan as an excuse to surround China with illegal criminal military bases. And there's dozens and dozens of bases. If the Chinese were to do that, surrounding Miami or New York or Los Angeles, the U.S. government would never stand for that. So they've had no respect for the One China policy of the Chinese Communist Party.
Some may forget that the issue which initially compelled France's yellow vests to hit these streets was record high gasoline prices. The price of diesel gas just hit a new record in France amid across-the-board inflation. Now the question is, will popular discontent return less than 6 months ahead of the presidential election? Ramin Mazahari has more from Paris.
In October 2018, a liter of fuel in diesel-dominated France hit €1.53. And for the next 7 months, every Saturday in Paris was a war zone of state repression. The price of diesel gas has just surpassed that all-time record, and many wonder if a return of the yellow vests is now around the corner. After the unprecedented corona lockdowns, diesel, petrol, natural gas, electricity, and prices in general continue to soar worldwide. Inflation in France has just accelerated to the highest rate in 10 years. Western leaders continue to insist the inflation is temporary, but many in France say the economic tension is undeniable.
I would very much like Macron to recognize that the French cannot live with this type of inflation. I normally budget 60 euros to fill up my car, but today I paid 80 euros. All these price increases in so many areas are a real catastrophe for the French.
Gasoline taxes are regressive taxes because they place the same costs on rich and poor alike. 60% of France's gasoline costs are due to taxation. Many drivers wonder if the right-wing government of Emmanuel Macron is prepared to ease this winter's burden on the average household by making the wealthy and big business pay a fair share.
The government must stabilize the petrol prices at a normal level. That would permit the people to get some financial breathing space. But the main problem is that of the salaries. Both the legal minimum salary and the national average salary are not sufficient for the people to live upon anymore. And this has to be openly admitted and changed.
As cold weather nears, a 250% increase in natural gas is forcing European governments to take last-minute action, including caps to corporate profits in left-leaning Spain. France's government is set to announce a small one-time payment for only the poorest households to combat energy costs, which show no sign of easing. France uses the third most natural gas in Europe. The persistent price rises and entrenched unemployment may upend Western plans to finally end quantitative easing and zero interest rate policies, which have produced record economic inequality. Those policies and the disastrous corona recession may have already set the stage for the next economic era across the West, dreaded stagflation. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
That wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
The day will indeed dawn when not just the Golan Heights, but all of Palestine will be liberated by the sons of the soil. No matter what crimes the Zionists continue to commit through air raids on Syria or the violation of the sanctity of Islam's third holiest site, the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Beit al-Muqaddas, a city which the Western media wrongly calls Jerusalem. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading, Israeli Regime Scared to Death of Imminent Liberation of Golan. Stay tuned for more. The elected government in Damascus is steadily liberating the areas occupied by a variety of terrorists, ranging from the macabrely murderous Takfiris in Idlib in the north to the equally bloodthirsty Americans and their clients in the oil-rich Deir ez-Zor region in the east, or for that matter, the Turkish army, which without any violation has crossed the common border into Syria. As the liberating process continues slowly but surely, President Bashar al-Assad hasn't lost sight of the strategic American-occupied Atanf Triangle, where the borders of three countries, including Syria, Jordan, and Iraq, meet and through which the crucial M2 Damascus-Baghdad highway passes. At the same time, Syria is determined to regain control one day of the southern part of the Golan Heights from the racist Zionist entity, which occupied it in 1967 and later, in violation of the UN Charter, has illegally annexed it. This has unnerved the Israeli regime, as is evident by the recent remarks of the new terrorist at the helm of affairs in Tel Aviv, Naftali Bennett, who is trying to double the illegally settled small Jewish population of the Golan, whose majority is still made up of Druze Arabs, all still holding Syrian citizenship. He has threatened to change the face of the Golan Heights by adding that he will quadruple the Jewish population there by settling Zionists coming to Palestine from other parts of the world. Bennett, as usual, blamed the Islamic Republic of Iran for helping the Syrian government wipe out the Takfiri terrorists and liberate over 70% of the occupied parts of the country. He fears that the day is not far when Islamic Iran, as the beating heart of the axis of resistance, will provide the necessary assistance to Syria to liberate the Golan Heights, whose annexure, no world country except for the criminal regime of the previous U.S. President Donald Trump, has recognized. The fake regime of Israel is living on borrowed time. The day will indeed dawn when not just the Golan Heights, but all of Palestine will be liberated by the sons of the soil, no matter what crimes the Zionists continue to commit through air raids in Syria or the violation of the sanctity of Islam's third holiest site, the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Beit al-Muqaddas, a city which the Western media wrongly calls Jerusalem. Of course, whether or not the Israelis double or quadruple the number of the illegally settled Jews in the Golan or increase their occupation forces and weapons, they will not be able to change the identity and destiny of these strategic Syrian heights. It is only a matter of time and a day the government, the army, and the people of Syria decide to push into the southern occupied parts of Golan. No Zionist army or mercenary forces from the US and Europe will be able to stop them. It is earnestly hoped that, before it is too late, the United Nations will persuade the Israeli regime to return the occupied parts of the Golan Heights to Syria. If not, there is no other option to liberate it except through armed confrontation that will not stop at the foothills but will spread all the way to Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Beit al-Muqaddas.
Food for thought. dear friends, and let us contemplate a gem of a statement from Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam, on the eve of his martyrdom. What an evil person he is who has two faces and two tongues. He praises his brother when he is present and backbites him when he is absent. He envies him if he is given and betrays him if he is afflicted.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at the supplications of Al-Imam Ali ibn Husayn Zain al-Abidin salamullah alayhi, and we are still looking at the first verse, and we're looking at the first word, which is hirs. A human being, in his nature, is created to love and seek perfection. The only problem is that sometimes, as human beings, we seek perfection and we love things that, in fact, it leads to our destruction, not to our perfection. So we get attracted, and this gravity pulls us towards these things that takes us from the natural order of things to the extreme order of things. For example, we love to have wealth. Everyone does. We love to have money. That's sure. But sometimes if I think this is where my perfection lies, this is where I become who I am, then that's a dangerous place to be. Then that is what we call hirs. So a human being, as a human being, we can easily make the mistakes when it comes to knowing or trying to find out what brings us to perfection and to the things that we want and the things that we seek. So we think it's a shortcoming. I think there's something wrong with me if I don't seek these things. So Allah in the Quran, when He says, "Innal insana khuliqa halu'a," is like He was created with this sense of, He has less patience. He just wants to get things done very quickly, and that's, He says, that's a problem. So one has to understand that the idea is you need to seek your perfection, and the things that are in fact lead you to your perfection, not to the things that you think will lead you to your perfection. So hirs itself will always drive a person to the brink of destruction if he puts his ideas and his mentality in the wrong place. Let's take a short break and then we continue, inshallah.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So human beings, as we said, we must have our goals and our priorities set correctly. Because a person that thinks his aim and his goal in life is to seek money and wealth, obviously he's under the trap or in the trap of greed. But when a person puts his trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and connects to Him, then his mental state changes. His happiness, his perfection comes in that regard. That's why we see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, "Ala bidhikrillah tatma'innu al-qulub." Surely with the remembrance of Allah, the hearts are content. My heart is not going to be content from me having a big house, or me having a big car, or me having a beautiful spouse, or many children. These things are considered to be naqs, like a shortcoming, not a perfection. The only perfection a person could get is when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. From here, Al-Imam Al-Baqir salamullah alayhi in a hadith, he says, "La hirsa kal-munafasati fi darajat." There is no greed like trying to compete with other people by seeking deeds, by seeking levels of heaven. Heaven itself is a trophy. Heaven is a reward, is how much you put, how much you get. So if I want to be greedy of trying to get as much or more of anything, in fact, should be heaven, shouldn't be this dunya, because this world, whatever is in it, it will finish, it will go, you will leave it behind. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us classical examples from Qarun and upwards, right? Those people who had more money than anyone could even imagine. Qarun himself, only the key to his treasury required 40 people to carry, yet alone the treasury itself. But where's Qarun and where's his wealth? And all these rich people that we have in this world, once they die, are they going to take their bank accounts with them? Of course not. It will all remain here. The only thing a person can take with him to the afterlife is how much he worked for the afterlife itself. So the perfection lies in how much we connect to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let us take a break and then we come back, inshallah.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. If a person is driven and motivated by this world itself, that will literally result into a greed. Imam Ali alayhi salam says in a hadith, "Inna dunya majghalatun an ghayriha." This world will distract you from things beside it. وَلَمْ يُسَبْ صَاحِبُهَا مِنْهَا شَيْئًا. And whatever that person who lived in this world, whatever he gains from it, he says, إِلَّا فَتَحَتْ لَهُ حِرْصًا عَلَيْهَا. In fact, it will open a gate of a greed towards it. So if a person moves towards wealth, the doors of wealth will open to him and he will become greedy in this regard. When he moves towards, for example, collecting and gathering material possessions, then a door will be opened. So each one of us, if we look into ourselves, we see that we have a greed in some field of life. Because there has to be something that I and you love so much that we are so attached to and want to have much of. And so this is where hirs comes from. Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi also says in a hadith, مَثَلُ الْحَرِيصُ عَلَى الدُّنْيَا. He says, the one who has greed over the dunya, over this world, كَمَثَلِ دُودَةِ الْقَزِ. He is like the silkworm. And with the silkworm, as you know, it wraps itself with silk until it kills itself. And he says, كُلَّمَا ازْدَرْتْ مِنَ الْقَزِ عَلَى نَفْسِهَا. The more that warm, that silk moth wraps itself with silk, the more it dies out of, the Imam says, it dies out of, the word he uses is gham, matat hatta tamutu ghamma, until it dies out of depression. Because now it's wrapped, it can't get out of it. Same thing with me and you, God forbid, if we put ourselves in this state of mind where we will become greedy over this world, greedy over trying to have position, greedy over materialistic life, we keep wrapping ourselves in it. It puts us in this state of depression. And then, God forbid, it will lead to our demise. And then the afterlife, obviously, the result is known. Inshallah, we will continue this in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواه از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را.
The light.
Hot air balloons were invented in the 18th century, enabling man to finally fulfill his dream of flying. After more than 200 years, people are still eager to ride the colorful vehicles. Some even use them competitively. In the German hot air ballooning championships, balloonists will fly over the skies of the green Bavarian town of Tegernsee. 25 of Germany's best pilots are vying for first place. The organizers of the event expect a tight race, as the contestants have all managed to pass the previous competitions with flying colors to qualify for the national championship.
A zoo in northeast France has an adorable new inhabitant, a white baby rhinoceros. The cute little male rhino was born on the 6th of October. The zoo staff have given him the name of Mole. He was able to withstand less than 2 hours after being born. Mole soon started feeding from his gentle 21-year-old mother called Tala. Mole is Tala's third baby.
Children and young adults have once again come back to cinema as Iran is hosting the 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth. Salman Kujuri has the story.
The 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth is underway in Iran, with around 600 films from 32 countries having entered the contest. The motto of this year's festival is Cinema, the Land of Imagination. In the national section, some 440 films from Iranian movie makers have been submitted to the secretariat of the festival. including 248 short, 119 short animated, 30 feature-length and 14 feature films, 12 web series, and also 19 Korean narrations.
This edition of the festival can be considered as a festival of cinema products for the most important generation of the next century, a generation that must redefine the country in the new world and protects its power, culture, pride, and identity. Although the tragedy of the pandemic is terrible, at least it assures us that the next generation from an early age has experienced and learned to deal with difficult circumstances and pay due attention to the importance of cooperation and teamwork in the face of major crises.
The foreign films include 32 animated and 30 feature-length movies from 32 countries, as well as 56 short movies, including 21 short animated and 35 short feature films. The movies have been screened in two cities, Tehran and Isfahan, both in an online format and in theaters in compliance with the health protocols.
I've narrated a couple of films at this festival, and I love to watch children's films. I love comedy. I watched a number of movies at this festival, and they've been good.
This year, I have taken part in this edition of the festival with a film for which my colleagues and I have tried so hard to produce. I care about the children of my country because they are future makers of this land. I hope children will like my movie.
Such platforms as Hashur, Tiva and Filima have displayed the films, and the online audience can watch the works on these three online platforms.
Children's movies are an excellent way to educate them. They can be very useful to teach them history, show them different cultures, accustom them to fundamental values, and show them how to think, all in a simple and entertaining way. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Greek Postal Service has come up with an innovative idea to speed up the mail sorting process, not by humans, but a fleet of robots. 55 tiny yellow robots powered by artificial intelligence are helping employees in Hellenic Post Sorting Center. They scan postal codes to identify the bundle's destination, weigh the parcels, and put them in related platforms. The program aims to handle increasing number of packages from online shopping, especially during the pandemic.
The end result is a threefold increase in sorting speed of parcels, ensuring next day delivery for our customers. These autonomous mobile robots are energy efficient, thus directly reducing the energy consumption of the sorting process, and that way allowing us to take a greener approach to operations.
According to the company, up to 80% of mail sorting has been passed to the four-wheeled robots. Each day, these little machines manage around 168,000 packages weighing up to 15 kilograms. Every 4 hours, they need recharging, which takes 5 minutes.
Now, an underwater museum in Turkey is offering a unique opportunity to its visitors. Diving back in time, the World War I era naval battle site turned into an underwater park on Turkey's Gallipoli Peninsula, and it has recently opened its doors to the public. The area is known as the graveyard of the navies and includes dozens of shipwrecks from battles dating back to the early 20th century.
One of the most exciting things about diving is shipwrecks, of course. They remind you of the past, and it's like a time machine that takes you back to 1915.
The British Royal Battleship HMS Majestic is one of the first ships that divers see as they start their underwater journey. The vessel sank during the First World War and rests more than 24 meters below the ocean's surface, but it still remains intact. Remains of 14 British, French, and Australian warships are over there. Museum officials say they want the site to become a new hub for divers who wish to explore historical events.
Russia has sent an actress and a director to space to make the world's first movie in orbit. The crew blasted off from Kazakhstan for the International Space Station along with a cosmonaut and successfully reached the orbit. They spent 4 months on preparation for the flight. After 12 days in space, they will return to Earth. The movie, named Challenge, is about a doctor who goes to the space station to treat an astronaut with a heart ailment. Russian officials say the project will help burnish the nation's space glory.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Australian scientists have developed artificial structures that act as a much-needed habitat for marine life.
It's extremely exciting because we have seen a total of more than 90 species colonizing these diverse panels. And we see 30 to 40% more species on the panels in the living seawalls than on the unmodified parts of the seawall, so the seawalls with no panels. So that's extremely exciting and really gives us confidence to scale this up to other environments and other artificial structures.
The project has installed over 1,000 artificially designed panels onto seawalls in Sydney. These craggy concrete panels are 3D printed and designed to last for at least 20 years. Only a short time after installation, they turned into a cozy new home for the fish, crustaceans, and other marine life.
So we have more fish in Sydney Harbour than we have in the entire UK coast. So we have more than 500 species of fish in the harbour, so that's quite impressive. But what we notice is that urbanization and the human settling, especially towards the coast, has a lot of impacts on this amazing marine environment. And that's what we are trying to mitigate a bit with the living seawalls by attaching these panels that mimic natural features such as rocky shores and rock pools and crevices and nooks and crannies.
After becoming popular in Australia, the panels were also installed in Wales and Singapore. The scientists say since the installation of these panels, the quality of Sydney's harbour water has improved. They hope coastal structures built in the future would be ecologically sustainable, designed not only for humans, but for nature.
Plastic pollution has become one of the most pressing environmental issues as disposable products overwhelm the world's ability to deal with them. Indonesian activists have come up with an idea to convince people to rethink their habits and say no to single-use bags and bottles. Environmentalists have created a museum made entirely from plastic waste in the town of Gresing in East Java. It took them 3 months to collect used plastic items, ranging from bottles and bags to sachets and straws. They were all assembled from polluted rivers and beaches. The centerpiece of this museum is a statue whose skirt is made from single-use sachets of household items. The museum has become a popular location for selfies and has received more than 400 visitors since it opened last month.
I will definitely change my life habits. For example, like when I go to the market or to a grocery store that provides a plastic bag, I will switch to a tote bag. And when I buy a drink, I will use a tumbler.
Environmentalists say the plan behind the exhibition was to send a message about the world's worsening ocean plastic crisis. The plastic problem is particularly acute in Indonesia, a nation that ranks second only behind China for its volume of plastics that end up in the seas.
people around the world celebrate the changing seasons in different ways. In the U.S., an annual pumpkin contest is held to kick off the fall season. Each year, farmers and vegetable enthusiasts from across the U.S. gather in New England for the competition. Anyone bringing the largest homegrown pumpkin gets the prize. This year, a man from Abington, Connecticut, got the prize for his pumpkin weighing more than 2,000 pounds. Alex Noel explains how he worked hard to produce that giant pumpkin.
A nearly unlimited amount of work goes into producing a 2,000-pound-plus pumpkin. I put about 1,000 hours a season into 2 to 3 giant pumpkins, and you're lucky if you even get that many by the end of the year. I'm out there watering, fertilizing, keeping excess water off if it's too rainy, which it was this year, spraying insecticides, spraying fungicides, pruning, training vines, cropping up leaves at the end of the season, putting blankets on when it's cold out, heating cables, fans. I mean, the list goes on and on.
The New England Giant Pumpkin Weigh-Off began at the Tufts Field Fair in 1984. That year, the winner showcased a pumpkin weighing 196 kilograms. The weigh-off has received worldwide recognition, too. Syria's ancient city of Aleppo seems getting a taste of normalcy amid reconstruction efforts in the war-ravaged city. A Syrian historian has also been contributing to make the city regain its lost glory. Ala al-Sayed is working to faithfully restore the lost sections of Aleppo's old city. For that, he is using documents and clippings he himself saved during the early years of the conflict. He says he came up with the idea to digitalize those documents in 2013. Then he embarked on organizing newspapers, books, and pamphlets while scanning each one to add to his digital library. Following the liberation of Aleppo, Ala came back to the city and started renovating historic places which are on the World Heritage List.
The North Dublin suburb of Howth has a new highly efficient firefighting crew. The group has 25 members, but none of them are human.
Howth was targeted by a lot of fire, and so there's a lot of gorse here, and it's very flammable. The goats, on the other hand, love gorse, so it's a win-win in that sense. I suppose the project also focuses on the old Irish goat and defining their role as a functional biodiversity crew. They're a hard-working crew. They're up for the job, they're keen to do it. It also instills key conservation grazing principles to tackle fire prevention, habitat management, and the control of invasive species. So it's the old Irish ladies that have a job to do here and are well able to do it.
The goats graze eagerly on the ample gorse bushes, which are highly inflammable and cause blazes in hot weather. The local council hopes their deployment will make Howth less susceptible to wildfires. Conservationists also hope that the project will contribute to the survival of the old Irish goats, which almost went extinct in the last century. Each member of the herd has a box around their neck with a built-in GPS device. If the goats stray too far, the gadget will ping and let the owner know.
Five Siberian tiger cubs born in a South Korean zoo have made their first public debut. The cubs were born at Everland Theme Park in Yongin in late June. Their birth brought joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts as they are listed as endangered species. Zookeepers say it's unusual for Siberian tigers to give birth to five babies at once. South Korean people selected the cubs' names through an online vote.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The U.S. infrastructure is not built to a standard that protects against the level of flood risk people face today, let alone how those risks will grow over the next 30 years as the climate changes, said one expert. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stancil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, A Quarter of All Critical U.S. Infrastructure at Risk from Flooding, a report says. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Underscoring the need to slash greenhouse gas emissions and invest in public goods to better prepare communities across the United States for escalating extreme weather, a new report released recently finds that one quarter of the U.S. critical infrastructure is already susceptible to flooding that renders it inaccessible, with risks projected to increase in the coming decades. Described as the first ever nationwide evaluation of community-level vulnerability to flooding, the report, Infrastructure on the Brink, compiled by the First Street Foundation, a nonprofit research group that specializes in environmental risk assessment, highlights localities where housing, commercial real estate, transportation networks, schools, hospitals, power plants, and other pieces of infrastructure face operational flood risk in 2021. The analysis also explores how spatial patterns of flood risk are expected to change over the next 30 years as the fossil fuel-driven climate emergency exacerbates sea level rise and extreme rainfall events, which pose direct and indirect threats to the safety and well-being of people throughout the U.S. The report states it is clear now more than ever that the ways and places in which we live are likely to continue to be impacted by our changing environment. One of the most important implications in this development is the vulnerability of the national infrastructure in the U.S. Using a unique national database that contains parcel-level flood risk information combining hazards, exposure, and vulnerability, as well as over 20,000 flood adaptation measures, the report maps Americans' current and future flood risks based on their proximity to coasts and floodplains, plus the estimated impacts of flood-damaged infrastructure at the broader scales of neighborhoods, zip codes, cities, and counties. As the authors note, individuals whose homes were spared the impact of a particular flood event are increasingly likely to find their local roads, businesses, critical infrastructure, utilities, or emergency services affected. The report assesses risk to residential properties, roads, commercial properties, critical infrastructure, including airports, fire stations, hospitals, police stations, ports, power stations, Superfund hazardous waste sites, water outfalls and wastewater treatment facilities, and social infrastructure, including government buildings, historic buildings, houses of worship, museums, and schools. Defining risk as the unique level of flooding for each infrastructure type relative to operational thresholds, the report finds risk to residential properties is expected to increase by 10% over the next 30 years, with